Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today's episode is another weekly docket where we recap the headlines in true crime for the week. Now, before we get into today's weekly docket, I want to address some of the chatter I've been seeing online. Now, last week I touched on the death of Renee Good in Minneapolis. Obviously, this is an extremely sensitive topic, and people on both sides of the political spectrum feel passionately about their perspective or interpretation of what exactly happened on January 7th. That's not what I want to touch on, though, in this moment. What I want to address are rumors online about custody issues and child abuse allegations involving Renee Good and her wife, Rebecca. At this time, I have not seen any authenticated court filings or credible public records that substantiate those claims. And at least one viral rap sheet, if you will, of a screenshot is being shared as proof. And that has actually been debunked and fact-checked as false. So, you know, many of you who are loyal listeners of mine probably know where I stand when it comes to politics in general. However, it is not my goal to sway anyone who listens to my podcast to either agree with me, nor is it my goal to ostracize anyone who simply disagrees with me on a topic, least of all politics. One thing I take pride in is trying to see the best in people until they show me otherwise. I don't assume anything about anyone solely based on who or what they vote for, but I believe that the way you treat people, especially strangers, speaks volumes. And one thing I'm definitely not going to tolerate is people who leave hate just to be hateful. So I've been called disgusting. I've been compared to a Nazi. I mean, it is just like insane rhetoric given my viewpoint, which I think actually is pretty center most of the time, maybe right leaning on some things, but left leaning on others. And so regardless, that doesn't even matter. I say this because I've gotten a little bit of hate on my socials because of assumptions made about me. And the thing is, I kind of expect it at this point. So it really, I'm not saying this to be like, stop picking on me, because it doesn't bother me. But I know that there is a small percentage of every group who operates at an extreme, and sometimes those people find their way into my comment section. But I never assume that they, those you know, loud minority, I never assume that they represent the group that they identify with as a whole. And so I just hope that the same grace can be reciprocated when we talk about delicate topics. And that goes for conversation with me or anyone else that you talk to about this sort of thing. Now, that said, I want to also clear up maybe some misunderstandings or misconceptions about what kind of jurisdiction ICE agents have over U.S. citizens from an unbiased, purely factual standpoint, just so we are all well aware of what the actual law says. If you're interested, if you're not, you can skip ahead a couple minutes. But if this doesn't interest you, you can fast forward to minute 10, and that is when we get into the rest of the weekly docket. This information has been verified, and I consulted with an attorney to make sure that I got this right. So let's just start with the basic question. What power do ICE agents have over lawful U.S. citizens? And what rights do citizens have if they are confronted by ICE? Well, the short answer is this. If an ICE agent confronts a U.S. citizen, that citizen has the same basic constitutional rights they would have in any other law enforcement encounter. ICE does not override the Constitution. The problem is that a lot of people don't know their rights, and that's where things can go wrong. So here is what you need to know. First of all, in any legal situation, you have the right to remain silent. You do not have to answer questions about where you were born, your citizenship status, how you entered the United States, or anything else. You are not required to answer questions just because an officer or agent asks them. Second, you have the right to ask whether you are being detained or if you are free to leave. If the officer or agent says that you are free to leave, you can walk away. If they say no, that means you are being detained and you cannot leave. Third, you have the right to refuse a search without a warrant or probable cause. ICE agents cannot search you or your belongings without your consent unless they have a legal justification. They can do a brief pat down on the outside of your clothing if they believe you might have a weapon, but that is as far as it goes. Now, if an agent tries to search you or your belongings beyond that, you can calmly say, I do not consent to this search, but do not get physical. Getting physical can lead to arrest or further detention. Simply stating that you don't consent preserves your legal rights. That matters because if a search later turns out to be unlawful, your refusal helps your attorney challenge it in court. Evidence obtained through an illegal search can be suppressed, meaning it may not be used against you. Now, if you are detained or taken into custody, you have the right to contact an attorney. Even if you don't have one, you can say that you want to speak to a lawyer. And now here is an important distinction. ICE operates in a civil enforcement context, not a criminal one. So because of that, Miranda warnings don't apply in the same way they do in criminal arrests. ICE agents may continue asking questions even after you ask for a lawyer, but you still always have the right to remain silent. You are never required to answer. Along the same lines, you don't have to sign anything. If you're given paperwork, don't sign it unless you've spoken to a lawyer or at the very least, if you fully understand what it is you're signing. So now I want to touch on ICE's authority and then we'll get into the weekly docket. Under federal law, ICE officers are allowed to question someone that they reasonably believe is not a U.S. citizen or U.S. national. They can also detain, arrest, and transport non-citizens in certain circumstances and execute immigration warrants. But this part matters. ICE can detain someone they reasonably believe is not a U.S. citizen, even if that person later turns out to be a citizen, which I understand and can acknowledge and appreciate that is where a lot of the concern comes from. However, once it is confirmed that the person is a U.S. citizen, ICE cannot continue to hold them. Detaining a citizen without lawful cause violates the Constitution. So lastly, let's talk about warrants and your home, because this is where a lot of confusion happens. ICE can only enter your home without your consent if they have a judicial warrant that has been signed by a judge. Now, I want to make this distinction because not all warrants are the same. A judicial warrant is signed by a judge and gives law enforcement legal authority to enter your home. An administrative ICE warrant is an internal document. It is not signed by a judge and does not give ICE the legal authority to enter your home without your consent. So if ICE comes to your door and, you know, says that they have a warrant, you're allowed to ask them to slide it under the door or hold it up to a window. And at that point is when you need to look for a judge's signature. If it is a judicial warrant, they can enter without your consent. If it is only an administrative warrant, you can legally refuse entry. You can say something as simple as, I do not consent to entry based on this warrant. If you have a judicial warrant signed by a judge, please show it to me. Here's the bottom line. If you are a U.S. citizen and you are confronted by ICE, you do not lose your constitutional rights. You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to ask if you're being detained or free to leave, to refuse a search without a valid warrant, and to speak to a lawyer. And finally, because this matters too, the vast majority of U.S. citizens will never be detained by ICE. According to ProPublica, about 170 U.S. citizens were detained by ICE in 2025. Now, obviously, that number is not zero, but it is extremely small compared to the total U.S. population. Under federal statutes, it is a crime to forcibly assault, resist, oppose, impede, intimidate, or interfere with a federal officer while they are performing official duties. That applies to ICE agents just as it does to FBI agents, Border Patrol, or other federal law enforcement personnel. It's important to make the distinction that you have every right to peacefully protest using speech, signs, and/or videotaping from a reasonable distance, but physically blocking agents, locking arms around a vehicle, using your body to impede movement, those actions are not protected by your First Amendment rights. So my goal here is not to spread fear, it's to spread awareness, because anything is possible and knowing your rights is how you protect yourself. The first story we are going to cover today takes place in San Jose, California, where police are investigating a brazen smash-and-grab robbery that took place Sunday afternoon on January 11th at the Macy's department store inside Westfield Valley Fair Mall, a major regional shopping center in Northern California. The investigation remains active as authorities seek help in identifying the suspects. Now, according to police reports, three masked individuals entered the mall around 1 p.m. armed with hammers. They smashed jewelry and watch display cases, apparently targeting high-end merchandise such as Rolex watches. The suspects then fled on foot after the robbery. Authorities are asking the public to contact police with any information that could assist in the investigation. Officials say some merchandise may have been taken and investigators are reviewing surveillance video. At least one store employee attempted to intervene, and a shopper reportedly assisted by grabbing a backpack from a suspect as they fled, according to witness accounts. But the smash and grab comes amid heightened concerns over public safety at the mall after a shooting at the same Westfield Valley Fair location last year, or I guess during the holiday season, so not really that long ago, but injured three people, including a 16-year-old girl, though that case was apparently unrelated and remains under separate investigation. San Jose police continue to ask anyone with possible witness statements, surveillance footage, or tips to contact them as they work to identify and locate the trio involved in the robbery. Next, according to an unsealed indictment in Oklahoma City, federal prosecutors in the Western District of Oklahoma have charged Tashella Cherie Amor Dickerson, who's 52 years old, and the former executive director of Black Lives Matter Oklahoma City, so BLM OKC, with 20 counts of wire fraud and 5 counts of money laundering tied to allegations of misusing millions in donated funds. According to the indictment, a federal grand jury found probable cause that Dickerson, who led BLM OKC beginning in at least 2016, diverted at least $3.15 million in returned bail fund checks originally collected to support individuals who were arrested during racial justice protests into her own personal bank accounts rather than returning them to the organization or using them for their intended purpose. Prosecutors say the funds came through BLM OKC's fiscal sponsorship with the Alliance for Global Justice, which is an Arizona-based nonprofit that allowed BLM OKC to accept tax-deductible donations and required transparent reporting of how those funds were spent. The indictment alleges that Dickerson provided false annual financial reports stating funds were used only for tax-exempt purposes, but the complaint describes a variety of alleged personal expenditures tied to the diverted money, including international travel to Jamaica and the Dominican Republic, tens of thousands of dollars in retail purchases, more than $50,000 in food delivery, like think DoorDash or Uber Eats, a personal vehicle, and multiple real estate properties in Oklahoma City and surrounding areas. Dickerson is presumed innocent until proven guilty, but if convicted, each wire fraud count carries a maximum potential sentence of up to 20 years in federal prison and a fine of up to $250,000, with each money laundering count carrying up to 10 years and additional fines. The case was investigated by the FBI's Oklahoma City Field Office, an IRS criminal investigation, and prosecutors with the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Oklahoma are handling the prosecution. But it is important to note that while BLM OKC is associated in name with the broader Black Lives Matter movement, it is not itself the national 501c3 nonprofit known as the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. Local chapters often operate independently. Next, a Florida gang leader has been convicted on racketeering charges and could potentially face life in prison. In Winter Haven, Florida, a Polk County, Florida jury found Hernando Thompson Jr., who is 36 years old, guilty on all 5 charges related to his leadership role in the quote-unquote sex money murder gang, an organized criminal network affiliated with the Bloods street gang. Prosecutors said the verdict was returned after just 1 hour of deliberation following a trial that ran from January 5th to January 8th. He was convicted on racketeering, conspiracy to commit racketeering, 3 counts of directing criminal gang activities, and these charges stem from a multi-year, multi-agency investigation that actually began back in 2022 and targeted the gang's violent and criminal operations across Florida. Prosecutors and law enforcement officials have described the gang as one that treated crime like a business, involving drug distribution, robberies, violent acts, and sometimes endangering children, according to statements from Florida Attorney General James Utmeyer. Investigators targeted Thompson and 12 other alleged gang members as part of an effort that involved wiretaps, search warrants, and evidence gathering statewide. Thompson had previously been out on an outstanding warrant before he turned himself in last year. He is currently in custody at the Polk County Jail and faces a scheduled sentencing on February 20th. If a judge imposes consecutive terms, he could receive up to 5 life sentences, 1 for each count of conviction. Lately, I've been thinking about how most of us are trying to be healthier, but we're honestly just guessing sometimes. We're taking supplements, we're following workout trends, saving wellness tips, and hoping something sticks. But what if the thing everyone's recommending isn't actually what your specific body needs? Well, that is why I tried True Diagnostic. They test your biological age, so not just how old you are on paper, but how your body is actually aging, along with key health markers like inflammation and nutrients. And instead of overwhelming you with data, they give you a really clear 90-day plan so you know exactly what to focus on next. So I took the test myself, and it was genuinely so easy. The kit showed up at my house. It was just a quick finger prick, and then I dropped it in the prepaid envelope. Done. I'm waiting on my results now, and I'm really curious about inflammation and my nutrient levels, especially with how busy life is right now. But what I like most about True Diagnostic is that it takes the guesswork out of wellness. It helps you figure out what supplements and lifestyle changes actually matter for you specifically, and which ones might just be wasting your money. They have a few options depending on what you're looking for. There's True Age, which focuses on longevity and how fast you're aging. There's True Health, which looks at your health right now. Or you can do the combo kit, which kind of gives you the full picture. No matter which you choose, you get your top 3 actions to focus on for the next 90 days, which makes it feel doable. And this isn't just influencer wellness stuff. True Diagnostic uses advanced epigenetic testing and is trusted by longevity clinics and health professionals. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, True is spelled T-R-U, diagnostic.com, and use code MAMA for 20% off today. You can choose True Age, True Health, or the combo kit as a one-time purchase, or you can do a subscription. Now, if you're already spending time and money trying to feel better, this just helps you make sure it's actually working. So when you try it and when you fall in love with it, be sure to let me know. Before we go on, I want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of today's episode, and that is Time for Learning. Now, let's talk about it. Something I know a lot of you have either thought about or you're already doing: homeschooling. And if you're in that season of life where you're craving flexibility, or maybe your child just doesn't thrive in a traditional classroom setting, I want to tell you about Time for Learning. Now, Time for Learning is an all-in-one online curriculum for pre-K through 12th grade. It covers all the core subjects plus electives, basically everything that you could expect from a traditional school, but built for home. And what I love about it is the flexibility. You can mix subjects each day, you can focus on one subject at a time, take learning on the road, or adjust your schedule around your real life, doctor's appointment, travel, just one of those days. You're not locked in to rigid school hours. They even have something called the Cinema Series for middle and high schoolers, which are story-driven, visually engaging courses that feel way more modern and immersive than what most of us grew up with. And for parents, this is huge. They provide transcript templates, grade tracking, and planning tools that align line with homeschool requirements in all 50 states. So you're not just winging it and then hoping that you did it right. Because I know that a lot of people who struggle with the idea of homeschooling worry about the fact that they're not competent enough to teach their kids these like intricate lessons. But you don't have to think about all of that. They've been around for over 20 years and have served more than a million students. So this is not just some fly-by-night program. Families actually trust it. If you're curious if Time for Learning is right for your family, visit time4learning.com. That, again, is time4learning.com to explore their curriculum and find the perfect plan for your student. And you can get started with a monthly subscription to see just how much your kids enjoy learning on their own terms. That's timeforlearning.com. Getting dressed should not be that hard. And yet somehow, whenever I'm like trying to dress up to go on a date or do something fun with Austin, I'm usually standing in front of a full closet thinking, I have nothing to wear. And that is why I love Armoire. Armoire makes getting dressed easy with a clothing rental membership that builds a wardrobe just for you with high quality, unique brands that actually make sense for your life. You take a quick 5-minute style quiz, pick items from your personalized closet, and they show up at your door in as little as 2 days. When you're ready for something new, you just swap them out and that's it. I've been using Armoire because my body, my lifestyle, and just my personal style have all changed, and buying new clothes every time just isn't feeling realistic. One of my favorite pieces I've rented was actually this white and blue dress that Austin and I went to a Teddy Swims concert. I wore the dress. I actually posted a video of us dancing at the concert and it went kind of viral. And I had so many people asking me where I got this dress, and I rented it from Armoire. And I'll also be honest, I've always felt guilty about how many things in my closet I've only worn once, if at all. Some things still have a tag on them, but Armoire completely changed that for me. I get to stay on trend, wear beautiful designer pieces, and then there's also like loungewear that I love too. I had this really beautiful floral Kate Spade wind jacket, like wind blazer. It was so cute. I wore it on vacation, got lots of compliments, and then when I didn't feel like wearing it anymore, you just send it back. It's so easy. Another huge bonus, Armoire is women-founded and women-led. They even spotlight women-owned designers, which makes me feel good about where my money is going. So if you're struggling to define your style right now, or maybe your body is changing because of fitness or pregnancy or just life, Armoire is such a good solution. You can size up, size down, try new silhouettes, and swap whenever you need to. There's no commitment, no pressure, just clothes that fit you where you are. And somehow it's all designer without the designer price tag. Instead of spending hundreds on one dress that I might wear one time, I kind of get this rotating closet of high-end pieces for a fraction of the cost. Fashion math finally makes sense. It's not girl math, it's fashion math. One feature I have to mention is quarterly rentals, because Armoire is the only rental company that lets you keep favorite pieces for an entire season for just $10 a month. So if you find something you truly love, you don't have to give it back right away. And if you decide to keep it, then that fee ends up going towards the final purchase. You get to decide what stays for a month, a season, or forever. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 60% off their first month. That's up to $150 off. Just visit armoire.style/mama. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/mama, MAMA, to get up to 60% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today and thank me tomorrow. Next, police in South Australia say the disappearance of Trisha Graff is now being treated as suspicious, marking a shift from an initial missing persons search to a major crime investigation. Graff was last seen in early January when she failed to make contact with family and friends, and authorities launched a search that included welfare checks, ground searches, and reviews of surveillance footage. As the days passed, investigators said inconsistencies and unresolved questions led them to escalate the case. Police have not publicly named a suspect and have emphasized that no charges have been filed at this stage. However, detectives confirmed that they are examining digital evidence, financial records, phone data, and last known movements as part of the investigation. Authorities have also conducted searches of multiple locations connected to Graff and are appealing to the public for any information, particularly from anyone who may have seen her or had contact with her shortly before she vanished. In a statement, police said the decision to classify the case as suspicious reflects the totality of the evidence so far, not just one single piece of evidence or single factor. They urged the public to avoid any speculation while the investigation continues. Now, family members have described Graff as being deeply loved and are asking anyone with information, no matter how small it may seem, to come forward. The investigation remains active, and police say updates will be provided as verified information becomes available. Next, this is a case that I think everyone should really pay attention to. The U.S. Department of Justice says federal prosecutors nationwide are seeing a notable increase in wire fraud and money laundering indictments, many of which are tied to the misuse of nonprofit funds, pandemic-era relief programs, investment schemes, and online financial crimes. According to recent press releases, these cases are being driven largely by multi-agency investigations involving the FBI and IRS criminal investigation, with a focus on tracing complex financial transactions and then following digital money trails. Officials say many of the indictments involve electronic transfers, falsified financial records, shell accounts, and false reporting, which allows federal authorities to bring wire fraud charges even when crimes span multiple states. In several cases, defendants are accused of using legitimate appearing organizations, including nonprofits and small businesses, as vehicles to divert funds for personal use. The DOJ has emphasized that wire fraud remains one of its most frequently charged federal offenses, in part because of its broad scope and the ease with which digital transactions cross jurisdictional lines. Convictions can carry up to 20 years in federal prison per count, with additional penalties for money laundering violations. Now, federal officials have also warned that public-facing causes, charitable movements, and crisis-related funding are particularly vulnerable to exploitation, so they are urging donors to verify organizations and monitor how those funds are being used. So I see this happen all the time, and in fact, we actually just recently saw it with the whole Rene Good case, where people were coming up with fake GoFundMes for, you know, claiming that Rene Good and her family were the beneficiaries. But also on the other side of the coin, they were starting charities for the ICE agent involved in the shooting. So, and some of those are not legitimate. So you just want to always make sure that when you are about to give to a donation, like a charity or a GoFundMe or a Give, Send, Go, whatever it may be, just always make sure you confirm that the beneficiary is who it needs to be. Because I've seen this happening where it's like a online scam. All right, now we have an update in the Sarah Pender case. I recently told you guys the full story in an episode dedicated just to that story. And at the end, I told you guys that there was going to be an update once the judge made a decision on her resentencing. So here is that update. Earlier this month, Marion County, Indiana, Superior Court Judge James Snyder issued a ruling on Sarah Jo Pender's petition to modify her 110-year prison sentence for the 2000 murders of roommates Andrew Cataldi and Trisha Nordman. After a resentencing hearing back in December, during which Sarah Jo delivered an emotional plea for mercy and asked for a chance at freedom after 25 years behind bars, the judge formally denied her request for a sentence reduction. At the hearing, Pender acknowledged her role in the deaths but maintained that she did not pull the trigger. Supporters, including family members and even a former prosecutor who initially called her the female Charles Manson, actually spoke on her behalf. Still, the court declined to alter the original sentence, meaning she will continue to serve the full term as previously imposed. Next, there has been a huge update in the case of Spencer and Monique Tepe. An arrest has been made, and it is not who I thought it was going to be. I guess I didn't know who I thought it was going to be, but when I had heard, I'll get to my thoughts at the end of the story. The murders of Spencer Tepe and Monique Tepe shocked the Columbus, Ohio community at the end of December, and investigators say that a recent arrest may finally bring some answers. So, as some of you may know, Spencer, who was only 37 years old, was a dentist practicing in Columbus. Monique, his wife, was 39 and the mother of their two young children, ages only 4 and 1. The couple lived together in the Wineland Park neighborhood. And on December 30th, Columbus police were called to the home after Spencer failed to show up for work, which was something family and coworkers said was completely out of character. When officers entered the house, they found both Spencer and Monique dead from gunshot wounds. Their children were inside the home at the time, but were thankfully found unharmed. From the beginning, police described the killings as targeted and not random. Detectives quickly began canvassing the neighborhood, reviewing surveillance footage, and tracking vehicle activity near the home during the overnight hours. Video was even released by police that showed a person of interest walking in an alley near the Tepe residence between roughly 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. on the morning of the murders. Investigators also identified a vehicle seen near the home around that same time. That evidence ultimately led police to Michael David McKee, Monique's ex-husband. Now, McKee, who is only 39 years old, is a vascular surgeon who had been living and working in the Rockford, Illinois area. Court records show that he and Monique were married from 2015 to 2017 before divorcing. On January 10th of 2026, McKee was arrested without incident in Rockford, more than 300 miles from Columbus. He was charged with 2 counts of murder in connection with the deaths of Spencer and Monique, and prosecutors later upgraded the charges to aggravated, premeditated murder, indicating investigators believe the killings were planned. Police say multiple weapons were recovered during searches tied to McKee, and one firearm has been preliminarily linked to the murders through ballistics testing. Investigators have not publicly laid out a full motive, but Columbus police have described the case as domestic violence related, given McKee's prior relationship with Monique. Family members of Monique have told reporters that she previously expressed fear of McKee and described emotional abuse during their marriage. Those statements have not been formally charged as separate crimes, but police say they helped establish context as investigators worked to identify a suspect. After his arrest, McKee waived extradition, agreeing to be transferred back to Ohio to face the charges, and he is currently being held in Winnebago County Jail in Illinois as the legal process moves forward. Now, if convicted, McKee faces life in prison under Ohio law. And in a statement released after the arrest, the Tepe family thanked law enforcement and the public for their support, saying the arrest brought a sense of relief while they continue to focus on caring for Spencer and Monique's young children while also honoring their lives. Obviously, this case remains active, and prosecutors say additional details will be released as it moves through the court system. I will absolutely keep you updated on this case. I've been following it. I broke it to you guys in a past weekly docket, and I remember saying, you know, Monique had been married before, but given that their marriage was only from 2015 to 2017, and we are now almost 10 years removed from that, I thought surely he would have nothing to do with it. 10 years later, they don't share kids together. Like, what connection would you still have other than a grudge? That's just kind of where my mind went. But I mean, man, if there's anything we've learned about true crime, it's that sometimes the truth is even stranger than fiction. I've also seen some online chatter regarding this case on Facebook. So I'm on Facebook as True Crime Kelly, if you care to follow that page. I share true crime stories every day. But I've been watching some of the dialogue surrounding this case, and I've seen where people who worked for Dr. McKee were commenting that the day after the murders, he showed up to work and performed a case, which is like medical talk for, you know, performing a surgery or a procedure, as if nothing was different or new in his life. Like, there was no indication that he had just murdered people, 2 people, in cold blood, in the middle of the night, states over. Like, he's not even in the same state. So that just really kind of boggles your mind that people can be so two-faced like that and just have 2 completely different lives, one of which you know absolutely nothing about. It's actually pretty scary. Now, before we wrap up today, I want to leave you with something positive, because after covering heavy stories week after week, I think we all could use that reminder. The data is showing that violent crime is actually down in many parts of the country, not just in one city or for one month, but across multiple communities. And that doesn't undo the harm that's already been done, and it doesn't erase the families who are actively grieving, but it does mean that fewer people are becoming victims right now, and that matters. We're also seeing more long unsolved cases finally getting some answers thanks to advances in DNA technology and renewed investigative efforts. Families who have waited years, sometimes decades, are finally getting truth and accountability. And on a broader level, there's something else happening that just personally gives me hope. And it's that more people seem to be kind of slowing down. They're asking better questions. They're actively fact-checking. They're resisting the urge to immediately react to whatever is loudest online. And that shift towards the truth and towards nuance is a good thing, I think. So yes, the world can feel very heavy. The news can feel very relentless. But progress doesn't always announce itself very loudly, so I just wanted to acknowledge it. And I just want to say thank you. If you've made it this far, thank you for listening to Mama Mystery every week. Thank you for tuning into these weekly dockets, supporting me on my channels, whether you agree with me or not. I appreciate your presence here. I appreciate the dialogue, and I always, always appreciate an opportunity to learn something new or to understand another person's perspective. So I genuinely do appreciate you for listening and interacting. And with that said, I'm excited because I'm going to start bringing Mama Minutes back. Mama Minutes, if you're unaware, are segments that I do on this channel where it has absolutely nothing to do with the news or true crime or anything like that. Mama Minutes were always intended to be episodes that had lighter subject matter to kind of help balance out the heaviness of true crime or the news. So if you see one of those episodes, it will have a different cover art to it. It'll have different music. It'll be very obviously different than the normal true crime episodes. If that's not your thing, you can just skip on past it. You don't have to listen to it. I'm not going to force you. You can literally just skip right past it. But I am going to put them in the same feed just to keep everything under the same umbrella. So with that said, I'll see you guys next week for Mama Mystery, Mama Minutes, and the weekly docket. Thank you so much for being here. Stay kind, stay curious, stay vigilant. Mama Mystery.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed. Plus, free home delivery with any bed and base. Ends Monday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.